Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. A lot of things can get in the way of love. Distance, money issues, being in different places in life. But this week's essayist, Amanda Gefter, writes about facing a very different kind of challenge. Her piece is read by Logan Browning. She stars in the show Dear White People, which has just released its third season on Netflix.
I stumbled across Justin's online dating profile while waiting for water to boil. I had just gotten home from running errands, ATM, mailbox, grocery store, and was cooking dinner before sitting down to work. It was just after 4 a.m. Message me if you want to talk about anything and everything until the wee hours of the night, his profile said. The phrase wee hours, as it turns out, means different things to different people. For him, a software engineer with an eye for design who can wail on an electric guitar, the wee hours are 2 a.m., maybe 3. For me, it's a little more complicated. I have a circadian rhythm disorder called delayed sleep phase syndrome. It's not insomnia. I've never had trouble sleeping. It's that my circadian clock tells me it's time for bed when the sun is rising and time to wake up as it's setting. As these things go, I'm an extreme case, a vampire, basically, offset from society's clock by approximately 8 hours. My father is similarly chrono-challenged, as was his mother. As a child, I struggled to live in the daytime world. Some children feel they were born into the wrong body. Me, I felt as if I were born into the wrong time. Now, as a freelance writer making my own schedule, I have reveled in the freedom to live by my own clock, going to bed around 8 or 9 a.m. and waking up around 4 or 5 p.m. I've always lived in cities. New York, Philadelphia, London, Boston, yet my world is sparsely populated. There are no lines when I grocery shop, no traffic when I drive, no phone calls, emails, or social media stir as I work. Alone with my books and my thoughts, I write about physics. Being nocturnal isn't a requirement for physics writing, but it helps. The dark of night is perfect for contemplating the universe. With everything silent and still, it's easier to notice the cracks in reality's facade. Of course, my chronologic freedom comes with a few technical difficulties, such as an inability to take calls from editors, listen to music without headphones, or remember what day of the week it is, since my days are always changing in the middle. Then there's dating. First dates usually go okay because they're in the evening, but complications quickly arise. It's hard to explain to a date that you don't want to drink at dinner because you've just woken up and have a full workday ahead. You tire of saying you can't go to brunch or to the beach because you'll be sound asleep. When they ask why you don't just go to bed earlier, as if perhaps you'd never thought of that, you have to explain that your inverted schedule isn't a preference. On my first date with Justin, we went to an art museum at 7 p.m., where we spoke easily about our families and passions, software and string theory. I learned that he had a 9-to-5 job, not my 9-to-5, the other one, and enjoyed cycling and being out in the sunshine. I didn't mention that I was midway through a regimen of prescription vitamin D administered in blitzkrieg doses. Sunshine was not in my vocabulary. For our second date, it was my turn to make plans. "I know you're on a normal human schedule," I texted him, "but the Perseid meteor shower peaks tomorrow night. Want to find a dark spot and watch?" "Despite being a normal human," he replied, "I'm totally down for that." At midnight, we found a cozy spot by the Charles River and gazed upward, watching for the stray dust of an ancient comet. Despite the city lights, we saw three meteors blaze above the Boston skyline. We talked about starlight, how it had begun its journey thousands of years ago, and we were looking back in time. I thought how, in a sense, that's always true. My now is not the same as his and never will be. There's always a delay. Each of us living in the immediate past of the other, regardless of how tightly he wrapped his arms around my waist. We are all trapped in our own time zones. The best we can do is try to meet in an imaginary middle. So that's what we did. He booked us a trip to go night skiing. I made it to the beach in time to feel the sun on my skin. He rigged up a high-powered bike light and took me for a long ride in the summer dark. I ate Thai food for breakfast. He ate pancakes for dinner. Eventually, however, the constant compromise made for two grumpy, bleary-eyed shells of human beings. We were in love, but exhausted and ready to give up. Resigned to nursing our heartache from the opposite side of a circadian rhythm. He went back to his hometown in Maine to clear his head. I returned to the night to live in mine. One afternoon, i.e. just after midnight, I got an email from him suggesting we try a new approach. "There is no world we both occupy at the same time," he wrote. "It's an illusion. We don't actually need to find that." Instead of fighting our difference, he said, "Let's just love each other from across the clock." So we decided to move in together. We found an attic apartment with tons of skylights where sunlight would flood the living room during his day and moonlight would stream through the ceiling during mine. We were still unpacking boxes when there was a total lunar eclipse, and we pulled a lounge chair into the kitchen and watched as the Earth's shadow slid across a terracotta moon. As a token of our new living arrangement, I gave Justin an illustrated edition of The Day Boy and the Night Girl, a fairy tale by George MacDonald from 1882. Snuggling on the couch, we took turns reading chapters aloud to each other. In the story, a witch raises two children in captivity, allowing the boy to see only day and the girl only night. But one day, the boy stays out longer than he's supposed to, and when it gets dark, he becomes terrified. The girl finds him shaking in the garden and tries to comfort him, explaining how gentle and sweet the darkness is, how kind and friendly, how soft and velvety. Since she's wide awake, she promises to watch over him while he sleeps. When the sun rises, he awakens to find that now she's scared, a stranger to the sun. And so he carries her in his arms while she sleeps until dark. Justin and I figured we would do the same. When a repairman insisted on coming at noon, Justin stayed home so I wouldn't lose a night's sleep. When he didn't have time to buy wrapping paper for birthday gifts, I had them ready with ribbons by morning. I always made sure to wake up before he got home from work so we could cook and eat together. His dinner, my breakfast. Then he'd go to bed, and I'd write for hours beneath the moon. Eventually, I would crawl quietly into his arms, and we'd dream happily alongside each other. For a few minutes, anyway, before he had to get up. On weekends, he played guitar, saw friends, soaked in the sunshine, all while I was still dreaming. By the time I dragged myself to the coffee maker, he'd cycled 35 miles and eaten two meals. With the sun setting, he greeted me with a happy, "Good morning." He told me about his day. I told him about my yesterday. And so it went, the earth spinning for each of us in turn. We made the most of the hours when our lives overlapped, then let each other thrive in our own times, like animals in our wilds. In August, the Earth made its annual pass through the dust and debris of that ancient comet. Late that night, Justin drove me to a secluded beach on the north shore of Massachusetts, where a handful of stargazers stared skyward. He put down a blanket as frogs croaked in the distance. Then he fumbled in his camera bag, pulling out a small black box. I couldn't see what was inside, just a glint, like the flicker of a star. Then he asked, "Will you marry me?" We lay back on the blanket, grinning as meteors streaked the sky. By then, it was nearly 2 a.m., too late to call anyone to squeal our news to family and friends. Instead, we just lay there in our shared place and time, surrounded by sand and ocean and a few hundred billion stars.
That's Logan Browning reading Amanda Gefter's essay, "The Night Girl Finds a Day Boy." More from Amanda after the break. Amanda Gefter and Justin are married now and recently celebrated their 2-year anniversary. Amanda says that they tried to have their wedding at a time that would work for everyone.
I was like, how late can we push the ceremony? Because I need to be awake for this. It was at 7 o'clock and it was in a planetarium in Philadelphia. So it was under this giant moon and all these stars. And it was really beautiful and perfect and dark and lovely.
Amanda wakes up in the late afternoon and goes to bed in the morning. And she says that for her whole life, she felt that she was meant to live on that schedule.
There was a piece of me that did sort of know deep down that I was just living on the wrong hours. And I was at my parents' house not long ago, and I was going back through old diaries and saw that when I was like 9 years old, I had written these diary entries where I said, I can't wait till I'm older and I can live on altar hours, which was apparently this like phrase that I had come up with to describe what I thought should be my normal day, where day and night are inverted. So I think I just always knew that, and I knew like someday I'll be able to do that and not be so tired anymore. The way that people who have this describe it, it's like, if you travel to another country and you're jet-lagged for a few days, that's what it feels like all the time when you have this disorder. And you, like, for a normal person, you eventually adjust. And the kind of definition of this disorder is that you're unable to do that. You can't shift. So just being on my own schedule was like, oh, my God, like, the brain fog lifts. And you're like, I can think straight, and I feel more normal, and like, it would be really hard for me to now go back.
Amanda says that before Justin, she mostly dated people whose schedules worked more easily with hers. But she knew that she and Justin were a great fit. And these days, they're still making things work on opposite schedules.
The hardest thing about it is not even so much the logistics, and it's not even so much not having time together, because in the evenings we have a fair amount of time where we're both up. It's the fact that we're never at the same point in our day, and we're never in the same kind of mental space. So, you know, he gets home from work, and he's been up all day and doing things, and he gets home, and he immediately, like, wants to talk and tell me everything that happened that day. And I'm like, please just let me have my coffee. You know, like, I just have to, like, have quiet for a minute and wake up. And then around midnight, my brain just turns on, and all of a sudden I'm like a chatterbox, and I just want to tell him, like, every idea I have for every writing piece that I'm working on. And he's just, like, trying so hard not to yawn. You know, all he wants to do is go to bed. So, like, we can be sitting right next to each other, but we're in different time zones.
And she says that she's learned to see her differences with Justin in a positive light.
Like, Justin always refers to me as his night elf, because the apartment will be a mess and he'll go to bed and then he wakes up and it's just sort of like magically clean. And then, you know, he can do so much for me during the day that I'm completely incapable of doing. I mean, it's really like writing a book to me seems feasible. Picking up my dry cleaning seems utterly impossible. It forces you to be creative about how you relate to each other and what you can do for each other. And I think that's a good thing.
Amanda doesn't want to romanticize living at night too much. She knows that many people facing similar challenges aren't able to have a flexible schedule, and life can be very difficult. But she says she has truly come to love the nighttime hours.
With this disorder, you know, people ask, like, would you change it if you could? And I honestly don't know the answer. Like, I mean, Justin would kill me for saying that, because he'd be like, of course you should change it. But I mean, it would make our lives easier. And it would make my life easier. Like, I'd be able to, you know, go to the post office if I had to. But at the same time, like, I really love the night. And I love having all that time and quiet to write and to think and to read and just to kind of have my own little world. And we get to have these different lives and then come together and share them. And I think that's special.
Amanda Gefter. She's a science journalist who writes about physics, philosophy, and cognitive science. And she's the author of the memoir, Trespassing on Einstein's Lawn. More right after this. Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times, says that Amanda's story deals with one of the most unusual issues he's ever encountered in a modern love essay.
After reading thousands and thousands of submissions over the years, and then coming across a problem where a woman is having dating issues because she's awake at night and asleep during the day, and, you know, anyone, 99.9% of the people she would date are living in the reverse world. I sort of seized on it immediately because of that. But I think that the way that this essay goes to another level is how they decided to attack that problem and their solution of just to move in together, essentially, and then take advantage of that overlapping time. It was just sort of like bold and innovative, like, we need to live together in order to have enough overlapping time to have a relationship, essentially. And I love that idea and the way that this circumstance was just so unusual really just moved me.
And here's Logan Browning.
I chose this essay and loved this essay because I could relate to it as someone who wants love and always is pushing for love, that this woman and this man didn't give up when their lives didn't necessarily coincide, that love can cover a multitude, that love can transcend and overcome so many things. I feel like this translates in so many ways, and if this couple could somehow figure out to love each other, even though time was against them in that way, that anything else is possible.
Thanks again to Logan for reading this week's piece. You can see her in Dear White People on Netflix. Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. It's produced, directed, and edited by Caitlin O'Keefe. Original scoring and sound design by Matt Reed. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Our intern is Shemi Aloko. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Special thanks to Julia Simon, Anya Stremian, and Mia Lee at The New York Times. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Additional music courtesy of APM. And if you love to listen to the podcast, rate or review us on Apple Podcasts or tell your friends to listen. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.